All right, this show brought to you in part by SimpliSafe. If you have 30 minutes, you never have to worry about break-ins ever again. Just go to simplisafe.com/Adam, get all the sensors you need, all the help you need as well to set it up. Custom systems going to show up post-haste at simplisafe.com/Adam. Reunited with my old Acme writing and performing partner, one of the funniest guys ever, and he's brought in some of the old scripts, John P. McCann. So we'll take a little walk down memory lane and actually do some of the material from 30 years ago. God, yeah, over 30 years ago with you guys and the news as well. First, there's Geico. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
People of Earth, it's time for another installment of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month, we got things that will take care of your body, soul, and scrotum. Like a sample pack of Tame the Beast Nut Butter, a blend with Tuck Everlasting anti-aging and anti-chafing ingredients that will keep your sack high and tight. We've also got the great Dano's Seasoning, who will make each and every kind of meat taste even better, whether it's beef, pork, or your fellow man. Dano's is low sodium and no sugar, so even Vinny will approve. We've also got Nude Mints to not only freshen your breath, but your gut biome too. These incredible products and a bottle of your choice can be found at CorollaDrinks.com for only $25. So prep your mails box. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived. Adam Carolla's sixth book and audiobook. Everything reminds me of something. Advice, answers, but no apologies.
At my core, I'm an improviser. I flamed out of the Groundlings, the famous improv troupe in Los Angeles that gave us greats like Paul Rubens, Kristen Wiig, Lisa Kudrow, and Phil Hartman, but later went on to co-found the Acme Comedy Theater. More important, I did the lion's share of the work on the radio show Loveline for over a decade with Dr. Drew, who can name every bone in the body but doesn't have a funny bone in his. So I thought I'd kick it old school in this book and do things a bit more freeform.
Everything reminds me of something. Available now, wherever finer books are sold.
John P. McCann in studio. He's got a book out as well. You can pre-order it, I should say. How to Run a Marathon in 13 Years. How hard would you fight for your dreams? We'll talk about that in a second. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Good to see you.
Lean right up on that mic or slide your chair up a little bit. Good. Yeah. So, John, first of all, let's just start at the start. Recollections of when we met in 1990 or one, whatever it was.
Actually, I think it was 89.
89.
Sweeney, our director, started the workshop in, I think, July. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere in there before fall, I think you and I met. You came in. I came in with a bunch of people that had known him for years. And we were the, Jim Wickline and mm-hmm. Some of the others were the originals. And then he started opening it up. More people started coming in. And you came in around that fall, I think.
Yeah, I'd been let go from the Groundlings. My girlfriend had found a little ad in the back of the drama log. And I was like, well, you know, good news and bad news is, which is the bad news is it's not established. It wasn't even called Acme. It was the Two Roads Players.
Two Roads Theater.
Yeah. Yeah. But across from Vitello's. But I can get in on the ground floor and it's sort of be grandfathered in. They can't really boot me out. So I showed up. I met John. I thought he was super smart and a really strong writer right from Jump Street. So I started to sidle up to him and start talking about ideas for sketches.
Right. We had there was talk that we were going to be doing a show soon.
Right.
Because we were about rehearsed out by then, so we needed somewhere to go. And he wanted more sketches in there, a la the Groundlings, which I think was his model.
Yeah, Sweeney's model was the Groundlings. Right.
So I remember you came up to me and said, what if there were these two guys and they knew everything. They knew everything. I said, that's interesting. And so I went home. I thought about two guys who knew everything, and I came up with a sketch. So we looked it over, and by and large, it stayed about the same for the next couple of years anyway.
We were
always dragging it out for some occasion.
There were no notes that I had. I may have just said, you know what I would have done. And John just went, I got it, and went home, wrote it. And that's the sketch where it was praised by the LA Weekly, and then that we were told that good comedy comes from improv and workshops, not banged out on a typewriter. But that's exactly – and then they used that sketch as why – here's what good comedy is. And it's like I've never done a bit that was more banged out on a typewriter before. I just went and said, here you go, John. Go home and write it. And you banged it out.
Is that it? Did you bring it?
I have a version of it. It's not even called – it became what I would have done.
Right.
At the time, I called it Expert Insight or something. And I'd had – I would leave these things. We were two construction workers, so I would leave open lines in there, and I said, Adam will fill this with construction talk.
Yeah, all right.
Smart. And work then, smarter, not harder.
Yeah, and then, you know, Adam would fill it in, and as soon as he was done, we'd move on to the next.
Yeah. Well, you want to give it a read? I know I don't want to put you on the spot. I just contacted John, or Chris contacted John and said, hey, if you got any of those old bits, I don't have any of them because I didn't write any of them. So they would have just been papers that got lost in time.
Hieroglyphics.
But John probably has it on a floppy drive or something somewhere.
Right. There's a prehistoric box that says Acme. So
uh-huh.
I just kind of reach in there and see what came out. But Adam was Hank, and I was Barney. So we're two construction guys in a bar. And then Hank says, nothing like a couple of cold ones after work, right, Barney? I said, you said it, pal. And then together they say, life's a bitch. My wife left home. Here's to drinking beer and pissing foam. And then Barney says, I need a drink after today. You know what the trouble with this country is? Everybody's a know-it-all. Hank goes, yeah, like that foreman O'Hara. Can you believe that jerk telling us to Adam adds construction jargon here, you know, by, you know, drywall or something, man. When that new kid told him he's wrong, O'Hara tries picking a fight with him. And then Hank says, he should have tried that with me. You know what I would have done? Barney, what, Hank? He goes, I would have just, you know, faked a quick left, then faked a kick. Then, when his eyes shifted down, decked the bastard with a right hand and knocked him into the cement mixer. I go, that's the way you got to treat these guys. Hey, check out the game. He said, if the Browns can score, they got a chance of pulling it out. And Barney says, you know what I would do? I'd make a handoff into the line, then freeze the linebackers, pump left, wait for the coverage to clear, then hit the halfback in the flat. Hank says, good thinking, Barney, but it looks like they're going to punt. Barney says, the coach doesn't know his job. Hank goes, hey, two more here, bartender. Barney says, I'll have the same. Hank pulls out a newspaper. He says, you're right about this country going to the pieces. I was reading about Social Security. They're broke. By the time we reach retirement age, there won't be anything left. Barney says, let me see that. Ah, man, they ought to give us our money now while we're still young enough to spend it. Hank goes, you know what I would do? He goes, what? I'd take my money and buy common stock at par, switch to long-term bonds. Then, when the interest rate climbs, unload in his short-term obligations. Yeah, like T-bills or commercial paper. Right. You know, then you ride out the high rate without capital loss. Stay short and monitor the downswing, then jump back into long-term bonds and take the capital gain.
I didn't fill that one in. That was John.
So Barty goes, yeah, smart ticket, pal. Things are tough, and a man has a lot to look out for these days. Looks at the paper. Hey, did you see this? Striking postal workers attack own union officials. Death toll unknown. So I didn't see that. It's really bad. You know what I would have done? What? I'd have broken this headline into two columns, used an active verb in the deck, added a drop cap, and shifted the artwork down five lines. And he says, you know, you have to. Otherwise, it breaks up the flow. Get a load of that chick. Tall, lean. I'd love to have her wrap those legs around my neck. Barney goes, yeah, look at that. Boy, does she know how to move. Wearing that black leather mini skirt and those high heels. And he goes, you know what I would have done? Barney, uh-uh. I'd have worn a jacket with softer shoulders, curvy tailoring, and, you know, a more fluid skirt that showed off the body without grabbing it. You're kidding me. What's the kid about? How are you going to get a sense of the body coming through without looking drippy or limp? And he goes, you got crap in your head, Barney. Dresses can't get any tighter. They got to ease up one way or through a short, modern cotton chemise. A real flirty handful of chiffon. You're really skating thin ice, pal. You can't mix 80s efficiency and practicality with some heightened approach to fun. Sloppiness is a danger. Things must be impeccable in an invisible way. Who says they aren't? You just make that jacket longer so it skims the body and use an alternative to the skirt. Soft shorts. Barney, that's real swift. Just check out an entire decade of power dressing, aggressive boardroom shoulders, and sensible, unreconstructed pumps. Movement and freedom are the watchword of the 90s. Power dressing, movement and freedom. You want to step outside and settle things? Let's go. They realize everyone is looking at them. What are you cheeseheads gawking at? Don't you know anything? Bunch of morons. I hate when people stare at you with their trout faces. Yeah, you know what I would have done?
Oh, my
There's
God.
There's a bit. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. That's why John,
a flirty handful of chiffon.
John handed me that. As soon as it kicked into the what he would have done with Social Security, yeah. I was like, oh, yep, he got it.
I did not know where the headline was going, and that fucking killed me. Oh, I would have broken it up into two. Yeah. I thought we were going to talk about the headline, not the formatting. Yeah.
Well, that's the genius of John McCann.
I added that.
Oh, yeah.
I was working at a magazine back then.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember at a time I didn't know what a drop cap was or broken the headline. We got into Helvetica or something. We got into type font or something at some point.
We did. I mean, this just kept changing over time.
Right.
Because we'd think of better lines for things or something else to put in there.
Yeah.
So it kind of grew over the years.
We tried to do a singing group. We never did this sketch, but we tried to do the one we kept trying to write was a fat singing group called the Lardells.
Yes.
I don't know, but that's all we had was the name of the band.
Right. It was a salute to Chow.
Yes.
Because we owned a smorgasbord somewhere.
Right.
And we're doing our own commercials.
And the Lardells were going to come out and do a salute to Chow. That's it. But I don't think we ever actually did that on stage. That was one of the ones.
No. Paul Rugg, myself, and you. I have a version of it.
Oh.
I have a version of the songs here.
Is it Mr. Sandman?
One of them is Mr. Sandman.
All right. Let's hear what the Lardells would have
sung. Let's see if I can read it around the notes.
Yeah, that's typewriter paper.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Did you bring in Skipper Ned Heem?
I think I did. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Among the favorites.
I'm was always
it's eliminated.
Such a fan of Skipper Ned Heem. And so, John, you went off to write for Animaniacs, right?
Right, yeah.
And you, I don't even know where you're originally from.
Oh, Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. And you came out here to write?
Well, I came out I was doing stand-up back there, and then I came out here to, of course, be rich and famous, me and everybody else. So
I do remember going to John's apartment for the first time and finding a collection of sponges.
Do tell.
Go on.
He had multiple sponges at his sink.
Some had bigger holes in them than others.
Literally had large holes in the sponges. And I thought, at some point, I think you have to throw out a sponge.
Yeah, I'm not going to say money was tight, but
everyone was poor as shit back then. I mean, everyone was just nobody. I mean, I don't know how you were making your living back then, if you could call it a living.
Yeah. No, I was working. I was an intern at this magazine, and then eventually I got hired on as assistant editor. But it really didn't pay much. They would use you, chew you up, and then spit you out for another intern, and then rinse and repeat.
The glory days, because you can't do that with interns anymore.
I was a carpenter. I gave Paul some work, you know, like it's just helping me out.
Right. Paul was a party pal or something. He was.
I was almost a party pal too.
Yeah.
So the one thing about not really being gainfully employed is you could just hang out mm-hmm. during the day, during the week. And I went to Paul's house and he was like, oh, I'm trying out to be a party pal. He's an incredibly gifted comedic actor who does a multitude of voices. A super creative guy. I mean, he became a freakazoid and did the Animaniacs and all that stuff. But at some point, he was trying out to be a party pal, and I went with him.
Like a character for birthday parties.
Yeah, I'd have to put the Ninja Turtle outfit on, and you know, you'd get the costume and show up at the place. And, I always remember.
Wasn't it a Batman one?
He did different ones, but his wife had a convertible VW Bug, and I don't think he had a car. So he'd have to drive this convertible Bug to the party,
sure.
But
it's
the
Donatello.
Deal was you got to put the helmet on before you turn the corner.
That's right.
The kids might be in the front yard and out you, you know. So he'd be driving around dressed like a turtle, making $75 a pop. I went and auditioned with him at some place in Encino. I can't remember if I'd already taught comedy traffic school at that point. So I just sort of looked down on the party pals because I was a traffic school teacher. And I auditioned with him, but I got the role. When they called me to tell me you got it, you know, I was like, I'm a carpenter. I'm not a turtle. Like I have a tangible skill. Paul's skills were voices and writing and all that. I could actually put things together. So I thought, I'll just stick with
Take a pass.
Took a pass on that, but not Paul.
In the hierarchy of party pals, is it better to be in the suit or is it better to be like Superman or Dorothy or whatever?
With or without head?
I think, look, if you're going to be a princess, at least it means you're attractive.
True.
In the female department. You have to have the physique, the body for it. And I don't remember all that Paul was, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe my kids will never realize that the nobility of horrible jobs, just having the slew of working the grill at Jack in the Box, you know, party pals, teaching comedy, carpet cleaning.
Working the hand truck,
restocking.
I caulked windows for a summer.
Yes, like they're never going to. You know, half of life is, we always talk about what you want to do. Learning what you don't want to do is a pretty damn important lesson as well. And I got that in spades from, 15 to 31. I knew all I did was what I didn't want to do. And John, we built the Acme Theater at some point.
Right. Yeah.
That would have been 91, 92.
He got it.
He
got it in late 91, I think. So started pretty much right about then into 92 because he wanted to open the next show early in 92, I remember.
So, yeah, it's when they were trying to re-gentrify Lancashire and turn it into NoHo and everything. Chris,
they,
we always talk about getting a picture inside that place, but I don't know if we ever do. Do we? Is it open?
I'll find out.
All right.
It is. Consider it gentrified.
Yeah, the theater's the same as I built it back in the day. I remember charging Sweeney, I think it was $10 an hour, and I just said, I'll just build build the whole thing.
Right. We went out into the Woodland Hills or something.
Yes.
It was an old theater there.
Yes.
And we had to, you know, undo the screws on all the seats.
Right.
And that was going to be our seating.
We got the seats from the old theater that was going under in Woodland Hills. God, it's the amount of work you'd put in just to play a show in front of three people. I mean, they were not very well attended, as I recall.
No, thank God for your grandfather. And
we did a show for my grandmother, my grandpa, and my grandpa hated it. That's all I remember. He did not like the improv.
Didn't he have the mole people to his credit?
He did the mole people. Yes. So you have to listen. When the guy who penned the mole people's breaking down your improv.
A fine Hugh Beaumont vehicle.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Was he really in that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you have do you have Skipper Ned?
Yes.
Because I do it once a year on this show, but I can't. I there's parts of it I don't have. Although I really do think I committed the whole thing to memory.
You may have. This is like I would memorize it as a block, and then I would go out and do it, and then apparently I would go back and look at this. I wrote this afterwards because I would. This didn't work. Worked. Immediate. I don't know what that meant, but, you know, I mean.
Adam's grandmother smiled.
Yeah. Terry Rollman, our light girl, she would laugh.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Bless her heart. But what did they call it that? Did you want me to?
Yeah. I love Skipper Ned.
So I said, I'm Skipper Ned Heem, and I run a. Run a ship for the Neptune Society. I want to thank you all for attending this seminar on burial awareness. For 4.5 years, I've been taking the cremated remains of your loved ones out to sea, scattering their ashes over the stern, tossing out some gardenias, then sailing back to port with a cargo of grieving friends and relatives. It's a tragic waste when you know that the waters you're sailing over are primed for deep-sea angling. That's why I offer the ultimate half-funeral, half-battle of your life with big-game fish like marlin or hammerhead. Nothing takes your mind off your troubles faster than a 7-hour fight with a swordfish. My vessel, the Ash Taxi, is a 70-foot converted PT boat, equipped with outriggers, a fighting chair, and flying gaffs, and a small chapel where the ship's cook will play hymns on the hornpipe. You can say you prefer Pacific marlin? So do I. They're real fighters. Sink a hook in a marlin and they'll leap into the air faster than a man with a paper ass sitting on a hot plate. They really go for that. As a sign of respect for your dearly departed, we'll decorate any mullet or bonefish with personal items from the deceased. So you saw Jaws? Well, I didn't, but I lived Jaws. But you know something? Think about your loved one. Were they a sport? If so, you may want to skip cremation entirely and opt for a chum slick of remembrance. Their remains will fan out behind the boat, drawing up world-class trophy fish like Mako, Hammerhead, and Blue Sharks. Now, while I'm skipper in the boat, my first mate, Gus, will tend to all your immediate spiritual and fishing needs. Gus is a defrocked Jesuit capable of delivering words of comfort in any of the five major faiths. If you're an atheist, Gus will tell jokes about God. He'll dry your tears, adjust your tackle, set your drag lines, gaff your catch on board, and he doesn't have to be told twice to crack you a cold one. That's right. We don't sail without 4 or 5 cases of Pabst Tall Boys on board. I'd just as soon scuttle my own boat as dock with a full can. Just kidding. We recycle all the aluminum. So read my brochures I passed out, and remember that when tragedy strikes, the Neptune Society is ready. You got a choice. Would you rather come ashore with a heavy heart or a 700-pound sunfish, big one?
Nice. The chum slick.
The chum slick of remembrance.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Oh, so you did work for the Neptune Society. I thought you were the alternative to the Neptune Society.
I think that's what it became.
Oh.
Because this is like a really early one. It's the only one I could
Interesting.
Find.
Yeah.
So it grew.
It would evolve.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. God. It's interesting because you can hear bits and pieces of it that I distinctly remember, and then there are parts like, oh yeah, I don't remember that. But I got used to the more evolved version of Skipper Ned.
Yeah, this I had forgotten the chum slick of remembrance.
God, that's funny.
I know that I'm
well. That turned into the loved one. It evolved into did the loved one die? Was they really loved one, or just some third cousin who owed you money? In that case, you may want to opt for the chum slick of remembrance, right?
Yeah, I think that's what became.
Jesus
what
Christ.
What else you got there, Johnny? You got the newspaper clippings.
Mm-hmm.
You got
pictures.
You unearthed the trove.
Yeah,
you're an organized gentleman.
I know why I'm.
You know the guy now that I don't have all this stuff. I probably moved 72 times since I did this, and everything just gets lost. And I'm no good at any of it, but. You know, one of our castmates, Bob Petrella, is the guy who, and we've talked about it before, he's the guy who was featured on 60 Minutes with, oh God.
Leslie Stahl, I think.
Yeah, but the other female from Taxi. The female.
Yeah, the red hair.
Yeah.
Mary Lou.
Yes.
Drive me insane.
We'll think of her. Yeah. Thanks,
Hatter.
Mary Lou.
Yes. Hatter. Yes. 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 Yeah.
They have photographic date memories.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Crazy.
And so Bob, we would just go to Bob. And I'd go, Bob, what was my first day at Acme? And he'd go, Ash, 1989, February of the 21st, Wednesday.
Yeah. Steelers were playing
Steelers
a night
were
game.
Playing a night game.
Because everything was linked to sports.
Everything was linked
to Western Pennsylvania sports.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. It literally. He would go, I'd go, how do you know that our first show, because the day before Jack Lambert retired.
Yeah.
And I'd go, all right, but how do you know that date? Like, he would link, everything is linked to something. He'll tell you the day and the date for everything, and then link it to a Western Pennsylvania sporting event. Yeah.
That's insane. I think we have it.
Oh, well. Play it. This
Here's
is Bob.
Our simulation of one of Holland College's games. Bob doing the play-by-play.
Marcus Hayes, the DeMar Harvey.
He's been imagining these games for 50 seasons.
The Jefferson Clinton.
And he remembers every one of them.
Who were the starting forwards in 1983?
The starting forwards in 83 were Otis Pookie and Brad Jasmine.
He can describe them.
How tall were they?
Otis Pookie was 6'6", and Brad Jasmine was undersized at 6'5", but real bulky.
You can almost forget.
Tell us about the years they made it to the NCAA finals.
They went to the final between 73 and 75. They won in 74. They went in 77, 78, 80. They lost.
That none of this is real.
There's other interviews with him and Mary Lou Henner. I want to say Ratton or something. Anyway, the point is he had all the dates of when we did a show or when this guy joined the cast, when that guy joined the. I would narrow it down to about a 2-year window. He would tell you the day it was. It's crazy,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know where is Bob now.
He's about. He was working for. I think it was the History Channel as a segment producer.
That makes sense.
So,
right. Yeah.
You know, they'd give him a cameraman and a ton of footage, and he'd have to chop together a show for him.
Fact checker.
Bob, I remember a few things from Bob. Nice guy, just regular guy. Loved Steelers, the Steelers and the
Panthers? Pirates?
Pirates. Yeah, is it? I remember one time we used to go to his house on Christmas Eve or something and watch Trains, Planes, and Automobiles or something like that. And he got a pie, and I was insane for pie, and I didn't have any money, and I was like, I'm going to eat that whole pie. And it was a pineapple pie. And I remember thinking, why?
I've never heard
and
of
And he was just like,
pie.
I don't know. That's a pineapple pie. And I was like, that's not even a – it's not an option. It's just not, how did you end up with a pineapple pie? It's the grossest, weirdest, sweetest, funkiest. Well,
there's a well-known dessert called a pineapple cake, an upside-down pineapple cake.
Which is delightful.
That's like – and a grape pie, a nectar.
Yes, kumquat pies, persimmon pies.
Not interested.
It wouldn't even be cut up. It'd just be one pineapple.
With a crust.
Crust.
Fucking pumpkin pie, Bob. We stopped talking at that point. Dawson has an Animaniacs question.
Yeah, John, I loved Animaniacs. Greatest. I swear that cartoon was not made for kids. I'm just curious if you had anything to do with this joke. One time, the Animaniacs are playing detective, and someone says to Dot, I'm going to go do this. You stay here and dust for Prince. And then she turns around, and she's holding Prince the Artist and says, I found Prince. And Yakko or Wakko says, no, I meant fingerprints. And she looks at Prince and says, no, and throws him away.
Wow.
Good job.
That is adult.
Yeah. I think they originally wanted sitcom writers to write on the show, but they found they could get sketch comedy writers for pennies on the dollar. So, you know.
Yeah, I wrote a script. I don't think they ever made it, but
didn't
at
you
some
write,
point.
Didn't you write the baseball?
Yeah.
The baseball one?
I did.
Yeah. I remember seeing it in the flow of things, but
I wonder if they ever made it.
I don't know. You should have gotten something from
the Screen Actors Guild. Backed up for years.
I got paid. I remember I got paid to write it, but I couldn't type or write, so I had to break off a chunk to my friend Rob. He just did all the typing and writing, so I didn't end up walking that much. And when I went to get my check, but it was still a big deal, I was a paid writer. It was insane that I couldn't spell and read and type and all that kind of stuff. The idea that I was getting $1,500 or whatever it was to write a script for something that would be made and put a show on TV was a milestone for me. But when I went to go get my check, they said the IRS took it. And I said, why? And they said, because you owe them $4,000 and they're taking your check. And I said, you know, I worked out a payment plan of like $23 a month with the IRS, so I don't think they're supposed to take my check because I worked a payment plan out with them. And they said, all right, well, we'll check back with the IRS and see if it was what we can do about this. And they checked, and, you know, lo and behold, I don't know, a week later, I got a call, and they said, yeah, they've released it. You did have that payment plan worked out with them. And So here's your check back, and sorry. So I got my check. And about 3 or 4 years later, I'd made it into radio. I'd kind of made it into show business a little bit. I was going to buy my first house, and I was sitting at the bank with the loan guy across the thing, and he's like, all right, we're going to give you a loan. House was $350,000. It was under the Hollywood sign. It was pretty broken down, but it was a neat house. And the guy's doing the thing, he's filling out the thing, and he's like, oh, boy, what do we got here? And I go, what are you? Evidently, there's a lien from the IRS that was put on you. And I was like, he said, that's trouble, man. And I was like, no, that's for an Animaniac sketch that they took, but they gave it back. He's like, well, listen, the computer says we got an IRS lien here on you, and that's going to make this loan, whatever. And I was like, they just fucking took it, and then they made a mistake. They make mistakes. They don't really undo the mistakes. They just make the mistake and give it back. They never took. Thing was on my credit for the next 7 years. It's just like every time you buy a car or something, they go, oh boy, IRS lien. Like,
Animaniacs,
I know. Couldn't be less, more innocuous. This is the most innocent IRS lien ever. I know you're picturing some big land deal in Florida that went south or something with some, you know, with some mafiosa type. No, this was a script. They gave it back to me. Guy. By the way, whoever's on the other side of the computer doesn't really give a shit. All he sees is there's a lien from the IRS. So you go Animaniacs and Paul goes Animaniacs and few people. I never made it over there, but I was thrown a bone to write one script.
Who wrote the Country Capitals, which is brilliant and still used in school today?
Oh, yeah, a guy named Randy Rogel. That was his forte, were peppy songs with lots of lyrics.
You've heard this, right? It's so
probably,
fast.
Maybe.
We have to play
he did
him
all
in
the
a
capitals,
bit.
All the capitals in the world. He did all the capitals of the United States.
This has been used in school. It's fun to sing along if you can memorize enough of it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What do you have there in terms of clippings or whatever that I may not have seen in 25 years.
Well, we have the large. We have Nikki Chitwood.
That was my character.
Yeah.
Nikki Chitwood Jr.
Are you in a paper bag?
I don't remember.
It was Taking Care of Business was the song I think we did.
Yeah, but what was my thing? I owned
you were like Discount Construction or something like that.
Maybe I was a construction guy, but I hired sort of exotic dancers.
Right. It was like a construction Lothario of some kind. And
sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yes. If I could play any role.
Yeah, the role you were born to play.
That's John and the aforementioned Bob Petrella over there. What else? You have the original flyer. Two Roads Comedy. See, Two Roads Players. How We Drive is the name of the show. That's, I remember handing. Well, remember I said I would go to Vitello's across the street with Sweeney, the director, and we'd do some carb loading before it was time to hit the stage. And then we'd stand in front of Vitello's. We would hand out these little cards, just trying to get people to go across the street. To great effect. Yeah. No,
he did one of those things once where you hire or you allow people to come in on a discount.
Right.
And like Groupon or something like that. And so we would get, we would get the senior circuit sometimes and, what did they say? Baseball.
Right.
This is a theater. You know, and so it was,
Yeah, I forgot about the Groupon or whatever the hell it was back then.
It was better when they didn't come.
Yeah.
Wholesale
the
tickets.
Yeah.
We had a few shows for just two people, three people.
I think any of us worth our salt in the LA theater scene have done that a time or two.
We did it pretty consistently.
Yeah.
You're just, as a sheriff?
Oh, yeah. This is...
That was the troll.
We had a troll.
Arresting a bridge troll. Suspected of murder.
Yeah. It was I was a small town sheriff.
Yeah.
Theater, I wonder how the review went for this was Dramalog, January 31st through February 6th, 1991. Do you remember this review?
I don't. I don't know if that's...
There looks like there's a review in here. Let's see if I can see it. All right. Let's see. Let's see. Paul Rugg. Yeah. Yeah, here. You look at it. So read the review, Gene. We'll see how bad it is. I don't remember the Dramalog one.
No.
But I remember the LA Weekly one because they basically said you and I were good and everyone else stunk.
Yeah, Dramalog was always a roll of the dice. You never knew who.
It was internal combustion.
Yeah.
Is that you guys?
That must have been us.
Start reading. The first word that comes to mind when describing the humor of Two Roads Players is cerebral. This is a thinking man's and woman's comedy, which is not always the most popular kind among late night crowds looking for some mindless fun. Following their How Are We Driving? Call Two Roads debut, the Two Roads Players have compiled a new slate of sketches called Internal Combustion, a fitting title since many of the show's references reference play inside jokes, amusing to the company members but never reaching the audience.
Come on.
The material, for the most part, is witty, but at times limits its appeal by concentrating on obscure subject matter.
That's not the other girl I know.
The group of six men and one woman are at their best when they focus more on the plausible situations, such as a trial lawyer overstating his case to impress a visitor from the TV show L.A. Law.
What was that one?
King of Torts?
Oh, yeah. Was that you?
It was one I wrote.
Yeah, one you wrote.
I think it was Bob was like the judge. You were one of the attorneys.
Yeah.
Paul.
We found out that some casting director from L.A. Law or something was in the courtroom.
So it's like for a jaywalking ticket or something. And then suddenly it becomes Inherit the Wind.
The Trial of the Century.
Yeah. Right, right. That's right.
The other one, a newscast featuring vague anchormen. Does that sound familiar?
I kind of remember that one. Yeah,
the vague news.
And a preview of a horror movie about a man turning into his father.
There you go, Adam.
Was that me?
That's yours.
Oh, wow.
Good gravy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Adam is becoming his father.
Yeah, it was way before that insurance commercial where the guy's walking everyone around telling they're turning into their
dad,
parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't thought about
they
that.
They liked it. Oh. The jokes are fewer and scattered throughout the more outrageous scenarios. These include a bridge troll arrested on a murder charge, a bickering couple being influenced by the embodiment of the voice of reason, and a swami-like owner of Vision World offering customers psychic suggestions. Paul Rugg is the strongest member of the group, consistently introducing well-delineated characters into the scenes. He uses his improvisational skill and wild spontaneity, especially as linguistic artist Manny the Uncanny.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
a temperamental movie director to infect the audience with energy. Oh, the rest of the alternating players, Adam Carolla, Mark Drotman, John McCann, Bob Petrella, Vanessa Thomas, and James Wickline perform well together, but need to trust each other more during improvised scenes, as well as to incorporate audience suggestions more organically into the action. We're almost done. Director M.D. Sweeney paces the antics rapidly, almost too rapidly. The improv scenes especially should be given a little more time to develop instead of having their plugs pulled early on weak laugh lines. Michael Pollack's keyboard accompaniment keeps scene transitions lively. This is the end. Internal Combustion has its moments, but hopefully in the future, two Rhodes players will aim their satirical daggers at more external, accessible targets. Will you show them?
Wow, that is right down the middle review, right?
Yeah. Like
every good thing, there was a bad thing, and I forgot about some of those bits. All right.
Can we please watch a little bit of
yes.
the Country
Capitals? Animaniacs.
This is
That's right.
truly incredible.
So you were working there during this, right, John?
I think that was just before.
So you know John's not a liar.
Yep, all me.
Was this yours? No, not mine.
I punched it up.
Yeah. Here goes.
Oh, this is the America one?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Columbus is the capital of Ohio. There's Montgomery, Alabama, south of Helena, Montana. Then there's Denver, Colorado, under Boise, Idaho. Texas has Austin, then we go north to Massachusetts, Boston, and Albany, New York. Tallahassee, Florida, and Washington, D.C. Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Nashville, Tennessee. Elvis used to hang out there a lot, you know.
And then it gets faster and
Princeton's in New Jersey, north of Jefferson, Missouri. You got Richmond in Virginia, South Dakota has Pierre. Harrisburg's in Pennsylvania, and Augusta's up in Maine. And here is Providence, Rhode Island, next to Dover, Delaware. Concord, New Hampshire, just up with Jaunt to Montpelier, which is up in Vermont. Hartford's in Connecticut, so pretty in the fall. And Kansas has Topeka, Minnesota has St. Paul.
All right, we get it. And just to reiterate, John had nothing to do with this. He may have slowed the process a little by entering the guy's office a few times when he was working on this, talking about idle chat.
Sure.
His office was right next to mine, so I could do these songs in my head
oh,
by the
really?
Time he finished, you know. So I said, don't you ever go to lunch early?
Yeah, you guys had it was official, although I felt like I was left behind, that the guys that I'd been working with, or at least some of them, had a high-rise office building in Sherman Oaks, and we're working with Spielberg, and you were getting a paycheck. I remember just thinking, you know, John had his sponge collection when I met him, and Paul was a party pal, and I was the carpenter, and then I was still a carpenter, and these guys had leapfrogged ahead and had these gainfully employed, on a successful show. I remember, I wasn't envious, but I was like, no, I wish I would have liked to go along with them to that place with that steady paycheck.
That's envious.
That's envy.
That's envy? I guess
that's
it was.
Exactly what that was.
Well, it was envy to me, I guess, suggests any kind of ill will toward. Oh, I wish it was me instead of them.
Right.
I was just like, I kind of wanted to go along with them. But everyone was so genuine, and everyone worked so hard and had so many lean years that any success at all was great. And then, of course, you know, I became a huge breakout radio star and fucking shoved it right back in their faces.
Scoreboard.
Yeah.
How's your little cartoon now?
That's right. The book, which is interesting, it's available for pre-order now on Amazon.
Yes.
Will be released September 9th. How to Run a Marathon in 13 Years, which is John's story of Well, when I met you, you weren't the healthiest guy.
No.
But at some point, you took up running marathons.
Yeah, I decided to quit smoking finally. Mm-hmm. And I'd always wanted to do it, took it up, started to find I was really kind of drawn to it. And then I said, well, what the heck, I'll go for Boston. Ah. So you have to run a qualifying race to get there. So I was training for my qualifier when I threw out my knee. And then, you know, I thought, well, it's going to take me months to get back. Well, the doctor said, you're finished, bud. You know, you run out of that thing again and it's going to crack. So I, you know, suddenly I was confronted with this thing. Suddenly there's, you know, loss, your mortality, you know, perseverance. And then it was just the beginning of my health really tanked after that. I had one kind of cancer, skin cancer, had another operation on my shoulder, and then I got prostate cancer. So I was like, I went from illness to injury to illness to eating. Mm-hmm. So, you know, by the time it was done, I was about 271 pounds. I had my own zip code.
You were always, John was always long and lean. So to be two sides, I knew you were 167 or something,
yeah,
right?
I was that for years. And then suddenly through this period. So really the book uses marathon running as a frame, trying to run that one more marathon for loss and acceptance and perseverance and the things you encounter when, you know, life doesn't go the way you think it should.
Well, if John wrote it, you should read it. That's how I would, that's what I would say about John P. McCann. Yes. All right. We will take ourselves a break. We'll bid adieu to John and come back with the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gina Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Meet news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, let's start a couple of stories in Monkeypox Corner. The president has appointed a national monkeypox response coordinator. Robert Fenton is a former FEMA administrator who's previously led multiple disease prevention and response operations. He'll lead the fight against monkeypox, which now has about 5,800 reported cases in the United States, mostly New York, San Francisco, a couple in L.A. Then the director of the CDC's Division of HIV Prevention will serve as deputy coordinator. Their work will focus on increasing the availability of tests and vaccinations and treatments.
We tried to get rid of monkeypox, the name monkeypox, yeah, last week. I don't know. Did the window close?
Well, because it's not really from monkeys.
Yeah. No, there's some report that it was racist or blah, 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 blah. It was problematic. I don't know. You know, in a world where we can form anything, sure, into a racist thought, monkeypox was considered. I don't know. It was somehow a slur against marginalized people or something like that.
What?
I think it was a bridge too far.
It sounds cute.
When we try to do stuff, like when we go, okay, let's call this COVID-19 a Wuhan virus, all right? And then someone goes, well, yeah, that's the origin, but what if people take it out on the Asian population and they get hurt because we're calling it? And then you go, okay, all right, that lives in some reality. Like, that makes sense. Monkeypox, they just announced, was dangerous to marginalized people. I don't know.
Chris dangerous can
find,
to monkeys.
Find the article on it from like last week. And I think they floated that one because they'll try for everything. And then we all as a nation went, I get the COVID thing, yeah, and the Wuhan. I'm not sure why this is racist. It can't make everything racist. So we're back to monkeypox.
Well, and also, this is just from memory, but I thought it really doesn't come from monkeys, but because it came from a lab and a monkey, because all, you know, these monkeys are tested with everything. Mm-hmm. That's how it got the name. But it's not actually from monkeys, so don't start any fires at the zoo. But you know how we like emergency relief? Boy, do we like it in California. Well, we're getting some for monkeypox. California's governor, that's Newsom, on Monday declared a state of emergency for monkeypox to speed up the efforts to combat the outbreak. He said this will help California coordinate a government-wide response, seek more vaccines, lead outreach and education. He says also he wants to stand with the LGBTQ community to fight stigmatization.
Yeah, well, knock off the orgies, gays, and we can limit the spread of this thing. But or look, here's the deal. They're going on. This is essentially spread through gay sex and lots of gay sex. So here's how we roll in California. If you want to walk around without a mask, a lot of judgment going down. Let's just say a year ago, 2 years ago. We're going to shut down the beaches. We're going to shut down the schools. We're going to shut down the churches. And we're going to fucking look askance at anyone who doesn't get vaccinated. But if you want to butt fuck your partner and pull a train, no judgment. We shall not judge. There will be no judgment. How about you tell them to knock the fuck off? How about you go, okay, you can't go to church. You can't go to the beach. You can't go to school. You can't go inside this restaurant. Fine. Good. Go ahead and impose that shit. If it's a pandemic, then there's a big, like, gay leather parade going on in San Francisco this week or whatever. Cancel it. Then how about you cancel it, you fucking hypocrites, or don't cancel the church and the beaches. It's got to be a two-way street.
Well, and also, it's like if you're trying to protect a community, by all means, let them know what seems to be the biggest cause and what they can do to prevent it. That's not stigmatization. That's helping a community that should know.
The monkeypox should be renamed for two reasons. Long history of referring to blacks as monkeys.
Oh, my God.
Thus stigmatizing blacks. Nobody's doing this. There's somebody who's looking at this country going, these marginalized, you know, it's the same assholes that go, scared of people who look different than you. It's like, no, we're not. Nobody's scared. People look different. And we're fine.
That's
we're going to go to the premiere night. Joe Coy. Oh, what's your descent? Oh, get away from me.
Get out of here. Hope the whole movie.
Yeah,
like
Cal
this.
Penn's going to be on tomorrow. Where are you from? Some exotic, dangerous land? Don't get near me. Christ. It's 2022.
But that's kind of like you said, nobody's saying that. It's like, okay, perv with a dirty mind. I didn't say it. Are you secretly racist because you're conflating these people? I never thought of that.
I don't know.
Yeah, but now that you mention it.
Yeah.
Thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some critics say it also is racist or is problematic for LGBTQ people. I don't understand, but
there is no position called the monkeypox.
But but also, monkeypox gives the wrong impression that disease is only transmitted by monkeys, and so. But the International Committee on Taxonomy of Viruses (ICTV) says that the consensus is that the use of the name monkey is sufficiently separated from any pejorative context such that there is no reason for any change.
I love that we need a ruling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we all had chicken pox.
Let's go to the booth in New York.
Right.
They're the ones that name
but
that,
those are just,
the viruses.
That's,
yeah.
That's just threatening to scared people, not a race.
Right.
That's where we're at.
Okay. Well, we'll get that money anyway. President Biden has just announced that a drone, U.S. drone strike has killed the leader of Al-Qaeda. And I did a little research on this dude, so I can tell you why that's so important. In a speech from the White House Monday, Biden told the American people that Ayman al-Zawahiri was killed over the weekend in Kabul. He was Osama bin Laden's top lieutenant on 9/11 and took over the group when bin Laden was killed. Sources say no civilians were hurt in the attack. And though al-Zawahiri never had the same name recognition in the West that bin Laden did, analysts say this is very, very significant. Apparently, they met, like, al-Zawahiri went to medical school and he wanted to be a surgeon. And he was, like, from a really nice neighborhood in Cairo, but got radicalized early. And then, like, bin Laden went to the school to speak. And then they became, like, BFFs. And he was basically, like, the brains of the operation. Like, we knew Bin Laden.
I remember that. He went to the school to speak. There were no protesters. But the next week, Ben Shapiro went to speak. And they were outraged.
That's
shut
right.
The whole thing down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they've been together, like, since the beginning. This isn't just some random guy.
I thought, you know, they kept saying they got him. He was out on the balcony. Mm. Now,
nice.
I don't know if he was a smoker. And smoking does kill.
Yeah.
Dawson will tell you. But he probably... I don't know how much time, but they were timing him going out onto the balcony. He was under surveillance. Now, so we smoke this guy with a drone, which I'm always in love with. I love killing terrorists, especially when they're high up in the deck of cards mm-hmm. of terrorists
yeah.
that we used
King
to have.
Or queen, yeah, mm-hmm. great.
The problem was, is he was in Afghanistan, just sort of living
chilling
there, sort of
family.
Chilling there. So for Biden, it's good you smoke the terrorists. On the other hand, what about the terrorists in Afghanistan and they're back? That was the rub.
Well, and then of course, you know, just like Bin Laden, it's like, don't think that you take out the top guy and look like the we're done. No, there's always a vacuum.
No, and the drone is like simultaneously super impressive and then simultaneously super scary because yeah. we're now with AI mm-hmm. and these drones, we are just 2.5 years away from every apocalyptic movie coming mm-hmm. to light, right?
Yeah, Minority Report, where the little spiders are going to find you.
Yes.
You're in your bathtub.
It's like if one of those drones got some AI and went rogue, that'd be a world of fucking hurt for all of us.
Yeah. So live every day like it's your last.
That's right. That's what I wanted you to say.
Listen up, terrorists.
Tiger Woods, talk about a hero.
Hold on. Can I say yeah. this? Living every day as if it was your last would mean telling almost everyone in my world to fuck themselves,
sure.
tipping at 10,000%
mm.
and going to a Golden Corral with like a sawed-off shotgun and yelling, everyone clear out of this place. I mean, if I was really going to.
That seems like a pretty decent day.
But then there's the...
Yeah,
you see what I mean? Then there's the next
day. You could only do that once and then
yeah.
what?
I wrote about this phenomenon in my book, which is living every day like it's your last. Sounds great. It's inspirational. It's not a successory. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. Living every day like it's your last.
Yes.
It's fucking, you're done after a week.
I felt the same way about all the, you know, sport red zone deodorants. Like I give 110% in the office, on the yard, at the hoops. You know,
I never
like,
quit.
I never stop.
It's like, God, I don't hang out
when
with
I meet
you.
My girlfriend later, I get her in a headlock and we wrestle for sex. Like, it's like, bring it down, yeah. Crack a beer and watch the game, would you?
Forensic and chill are great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tiger Woods has rejected the $800 million offer to leave the PGA Tour for the LIV Golf, sponsored by Saudi Arabia. Forbes magazine.
Chris, now you got to find the Man Show deodorant commercial because it made me laugh. Made me think about it. Sorry.
Forbes magazine estimates that this would increase Tiger's worth to over $1 billion. It would likely take much more than $800 million for him to join, though. The Saudis bankrolled LIV Golf. The same Saudis that murdered an American journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, who was critical of the Saudi royals, plus many other things, myriad. Some people have taken him up on it. You know, some of the golfers. Phil Mickelson. And then some people are just like, eh. I was dance with the one that brung me.
Yeah, we're in this time where the people who have the most or tons of oodles of cash are some of the worst players in the world. And now, whether it's China or this or
oligarchs.
Russian, yeah, it's just like, so now we're asking everyone to make the decision between being insanely compensated. And then the problem is you go over here and you go, oh, okay, what about LeBron James and what China? He's not supporting China. And you can go, there's a lot of whataboutism. I don't know. I will say this. It's real easy to sort of sit by the sidelines and go, I couldn't be bought in any. Bust a check out and put about 14 zeros behind it. And let's see if you could rationalize playing sure. a few rounds
right.
for them.
And then, of course, the first rationalization that at least I come from, because I was having this conversation with my mom about this story. Think of all the good I could, you know, I don't need 200 million.
That's right.
I need 20 million. Mm-hmm. Think of all the good I could do in the world with $180 million.
You could eradicate monkeypox.
That's yeah. exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, Phil's got parlays to make.
Yeah.
Oh, that
he's got
a
gambling habit.
Let's talk about dads for a hot second. I don't know if you saw this story yet, Adam, but gives Mr. Carolla a real run for his money.
Mm.
Errol Musk.
Mm-mm. Oh, Elon's dad?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
you can add him to fathers that aren't fans of their kids, no matter how successful they are. Errol Musk appeared on the Jackie O radio show in Australia Monday and admitted that he's not proud of his son for his tech accomplishments and becoming a billionaire. Errol said, you know, we are a family that have been doing a lot of things for a long time. It's not as if we suddenly started doing something. Mm. Errol added that his favorite child is Elon's brother, Kimball, whom Errol called his pride and joy. He added insult to injury by fat shaming Elon after photos of his son came out. He said, Elon is very strongly built, but he's been eating badly, and encouraged him to take a weight loss product called Garcinia Cambogia. And Errol has also...
Can I get paid?
He wants people to know that he has a fleet of cars, but not one Tesla.
Wow. Oh. It's so... It's interesting, you know. It reminded me of talking to Norman Lear, who's now 100, about his mom never gave it up to him. It's like, it's this weird conceit where you go, maybe if I built my own car company and then put it in orbit around with my own rocket, then the old man,
he'll have to acknowledge.
Yeah. No, and I'll tell you why. Because when you're wired the other way around, the mom or the dad, it's like if it was the other way, it'd be like, Elon, yeah, he just got a job at Chipotle. He's 47. I know. That's why they're looking to make him junior manager. Like, you would talk, the people that are enthusiastic about their kids will be enthusiastic about anything.
No matter what.
No matter what. And if they're not, it's a two-way street. Yeah. If they're not into it, they're not into it.
And if they're that sadistic, the more famous and popular and successful Elon becomes, the more fun it is to shit on him.
That's
true.
Yes. Yeah, the bigger they are.
Yeah.
All right, we got the Man Show deodorant commercial, I think.
Dirt biking.
That's right.
I'm Adam Carolla. No matter what I'm doing, I give it 110%. Hey, I demand the same for my deodorant. Whether I'm riding, shooting hoops, or masturbating. I need maximum protection. Man Show deodorant protection.
Man Show deodorant is specifically formulated for the chronic masturbator. While regular deodorant stop working at 100%, Man Show deodorant keeps going to 110% to offer you maximum protection.
Because while the days were made for masturbating, the nights were made for masturbating.
Masturbate a picture of
Man
yourself.
Man Show deodorant for the chronic masturbator like you.
Bye, Man Show.
That's good nice. Shit.
Yeah, you know, that was Jeremy McGrath who was riding that motorcycle.
Oh, really?
He was a friend of mine. It was, you know, he's won the Super Bowl of motocross 13 times or whatever. And I was like, hey, we're doing this Man Show bit. Can we just get you on the bike and just get some B-roll of you, get some air?
For him, it's simple. I'm sure it looks impressive to all the boss.
Yeah.
It's a good tagline, too.
It's good.
Yeah.
Well, the days are for masturbating. The nights are for masturbating.
Shut that at our house. That at a park. I'm trying to think of where.
I appreciate you shaking the hair out of your eyes.
Yeah, that was great.
How I pulled the helmet off.
That's great.
Yeah, I have no hair to move. Yeah, my hair is unmovable. All right, let's do one more.
All right. Oh, you know what? We're talking about.
That was Ralph Garman doing the VO.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, and I have no idea how we did the jingle. You know, by Man Show.
It was good. Yeah. Let's stay on the wheeled stuff. These two dudes in Italy, they broke a Guinness World Record by changing a tire on a vehicle while it was moving.
Mm.
And I'll show you the put it on mute while I tell you about it. Driver Manuel Zoldan flipped a BMW 3 Series onto two wheels, allowing his partner to hang out the car and change the tire in 1 minute and 17 seconds. So how did he do it? I know you guys are watching. First, the driver tips the BMW on two wheels. Immediately as this is done, the second person, donning this like Evel Knievel costume, gets out of the side window of the BMW. He then flings himself onto the hood, getting into position to make the change. Beforehand, the replacement wheel is clamped to the side so he can just sort of get it quickly. On the side of the BMW, the replacement tire is attached to a hook. Then the tire is set onto the front hub, and one by one, the lug nuts are spun back onto the spindle. Finally, an impact wrench tightens all the lug nuts before the installer jumps off the car as it slowly circles around the arena.
You can only pull this off in a two-wheel drive vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
See the front wheel.
Yeah, it would be turning. Yeah, or rear wheel for sure. Or you could do the front or the rear, right?
Things that never had to be done, but like, wow, it's impressive.
You know what's interesting about their choice of vehicle, the BMW 3 Series? which is the it's weird. He's not wearing a helmet. The guy's outside the car, but you think he would because if the thing comes down, he's going to bonk his head. Very cool. So vehicles in general, some vehicles have five lugs. Mm-hmm. Some have four lugs. Many have four lugs. Like Datsuns, all the old Datsuns I have are four lug bolts, not five. And then there's Ford and Chevy and there's different ones. But why not do a four lug vehicle? I feel like
buy some time.
You're just getting rid of one of the things to drop or go wrong or whatever. It's interesting that five is sort of the max, four is considered on the lower end, and they went with the fiver.
Yeah.
Could have gone with the four. Still, I wouldn't have argued about the record.
I wonder if the balance of the BMW is that much more superior.
I don't know. I've found that if you bring things like that up to people, they go, huh. I go, really? I have nine cars over there with four. All of them have four lugs. Could have been 20% faster.
Thought one, did BMW give a little bit of money to be a part of this?
Yeah, were they the sponsor?
So maybe they had to, or their hands were tied. Number two, I didn't notice. Did he do all five lugs? Or
I think he did.
I didn't notice.
Well, either way, even if you don't put them back, you had to take them off.
Right.
Yeah, I think he did all five. Anyway.
Impressive.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
I know we're bringing it home, but let me just tell you one thing since we were talking about monkeypox. Something has been renamed because it got bad press for so long, and I just want you to know, murder hornets aren't murder hornets anymore.
Oh, I forgot about
that. You can't call them that. You also can't call them, what was it? They were also like Asian something hornets.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're officially northern giant hornets. Because we found a couple here, and we don't want to stigmatize with the violence and the danger, so they are now northern giant hornets. They are not murder hornets.
This is like Heinz Field. Like you can rename it all you want, but everyone's going to call it. Everyone's going to call it what they call it.
Oh yeah, they were also called Asian hornets.
Oh
that's,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
that was no
a, that's
fly.
A, pardon the pun, no fly
that's
zone.
COVID hornets.
Right.
Yeah, Howard Cosell famously got in trouble calling a Monday Night Football game, calling one of the wide receivers on the Washington Redskins.
Monkey or something, right?
Like, yeah.
Where did Monkey go?
They had a receiver named Art Monk, but it was not the one he called a monkey. It was
could have got away with that.
Little possession receiver.
He scampered. Right?
And he was like, yeah, I caught the ball and he scampered along. He's like, little monkey go. And then he got in trouble long before any of this shit. You know, we're just talking about 1985, you know, like way before any of this shit happened. And he had a very plausible sort of I like plausible deniability. I like when I hear it and I go, yeah, okay. Like that whole Sesame Street thing. The story with the person that's inside the thing, like waving the person off, is somebody was standing holding their kid, their infant or something, and wanted them to take a picture. And they were going, no, I can't.
Mm.
I can't do the kid, which the two black kids are right underneath them.
And probably can't see them.
The person holding the child is 5 feet in front of them, but out of camera's view. And that person's story is this person's trying to hand me a kid and I'm waving it off. I don't know if it happened or not, but you can that's all right. That makes sense. Howard Cosell said that he calls his grandkids little monkeys, little monkeys running around. That's what he calls them, scampering around. Chris says it's 1972. That feels too early for me.
When he said, look at that little monkey run, that was in 1972. But in 83, he said, Joe Gibbs wanted to get this kid and that little monkey gets loose, doesn't he?
So that's the one he got into trouble for. Joe Gibbs. That would have been the Washington.
Early
that's
80s,
the one I was thinking of. Yeah. So he got in trouble. But again, when you go, I call my grandkids little monkeys and they scan around and you go, all right.
Yeah.
And by the way, could Howard Cosell be racist? I mean, you think about him and Muhammad Ali and what he did for that guy and all that. All right, bring it home, little monkey.
You got it. I'm little monkey, and that's the news.
I'm a carpenter. I'm not a turtle.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
John filled in a lot of blanks I'd forgotten about over the years. Last but not least, there's Geico. Do you own, do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, and you work hard, too. That's why you should bundle with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save and how easy it is to save when you go with Geico. That is Geico. All right, Salt Lake City coming up. Wise Guys Comedy Club, August 26th, 27th. Go to AdamCarolla.com and get the book. Mike Dawson doing stand-up at the Comedy Chateau in North Hollywood. That'll be tonight at 8 p.m. Free tickets. Follow at Dos Angeles and go out and see Mike crushing it out there doing stand-up. You can check out John P. McCann, How to Run a Marathon in 13 Years. Pre-order that bad boy. And until next time, Adam Carolla for John McCann, Gina Grad, and Bald Ryan. Say it. Mahala.
Life's a bitch. My wife left home. Here's to drinking beer and pissing foam.
Pick up Adam's new book, Everything Reminds Me of Something. The audiobook is also available. Get it now wherever finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see the Ace Man at AdamCarolla.com.
Do you own, do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.